can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey.
And I'm your co-host, Sarah.
And a few episodes ago, we had talked about Chronicle, which was done in a found footage-like manner, but as if you were like looking at a case and then just taking all the footage you possibly could from as many sources as you could find.
Right.
Our first film feels like that, but if instead of being a detective, you were like a hacker. And so you were like taking all the internet on the cloud things that you could find and putting them together to tell the story.
Okay. Okay.
So this film is Searching. This stars John Cho and Deborah Messing. And John Cho.
It's an odd combination.
I mean,
it could work. I'm not saying
Them together. They're not in a relationship.
Well, it's just when you say that, those are two names that I don't expect to be together.
But so John Cho plays a dad whose teenage daughter goes missing, and Deborah Messing plays the detective who's trying to help him find her.
Mm-hmm.
And this is done entirely through, like, the computer, cell phone, whatever.
And the only thing that I know about this movie is that it stars John Cho, whom I love, and that it's now become a meme. I keep seeing pictures of John Cho's face, like, in a webcam, and then there's something written about it.
I haven't seen that one, but I can see why people would, because when I first saw the previews, I was just like, you're going to do the whole thing through like a webcam? I'm going to watch everything through a webcam? You don't watch everything through a webcam entirely. You do at times get like text messages. You do at times get like YouTube videos, but it's essentially everything you could find kind of through the internet. Again, if you were a hacker, if the hacker wanted to put together this story, this is kind of how they do it. So there are times like when he's out and about and he's not doing anything. You have to get it through like someone's cell phone video, essentially.
Okay.
But this actually works pretty well. The creator of this film is also the one who created Unfriended, which was the horror film that did this, where the people are all video chatting and then they, I think, keep getting killed one by one. I didn't see it because it's a horror film.
Right.
And I would, especially not in the theater, I'd be like, nope, I need to be in my house with all the lights on, with all the doors locked, and a pillow to scream into so I don't scare people, and I will still be terrified when I go to bed at night.
And if you don't think this is true, listeners, go and listen to last week's episode where she was in the theater by herself, and it wasn't even a horror film, and she was like, and I'm not making fun of you because that's me too, but just... Yeah,
my imagination is strong and can imagine any terrible thing you kind of can think of. But so for this, I went into this going, I don't know how well this is going to go. I think this might be an interesting way to tell the story for like the first 20 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, I don't know about it. And it actually works pretty well for most of the film up until about the end. When you get to like the let's resolve everything part of the story, there's something they have to do where it, again, if this was a hacker, I could buy it. It's not clear. You're seeing the story. It's not clear that anyone's specifically telling a story here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you happen to be looking at all the internet things that have to do with this and seeing this person through their webcam or whatever. It's not clear, you know, who decided this story needs to be told. But John Cho, I think, does a really good performance. He's clearly a very, I don't want to say overprotective father, but he's very involved, I guess.
Okay.
He's constantly sort of checking up on his daughter. And we start, there's a montage at the beginning of this film that sort of sets everything up in a really wonderful manner. Because again, it's all through internet, computer, text, whatever. So you get this montage using like Windows XP, whatever, setting up who these characters are and where we start when we finally get into the actual story. And then when we get into the actual story, almost everything's on Mac. But
so is it just one big ad for MacBooks?
Or? It's not. No. Like, you can tell everything's on Mac, but it's not like we show the Mac, you know, logo a gazillion times.
Okay.
It's just like you can tell, ah, yes, we're on, you know,
different operating system.
Right. Okay. We're using Mac these apps versus if you were doing this on a Windows, clearly you couldn't just click that app there and do that. But we are going to take this moment and take a short break, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Deborah Messing, her character is interesting. She comes in and while I like the way they did this, because again, I didn't think you could do this with this method of telling the story well, I like the way they did it, but it does then require at least me to sort of stretch my disbelief at times. Because she and John Cho have several times where they like video chat, FaceTime each other.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, would the detective in the missing children's department be FaceTiming with the parents of the child they're trying to find?
Maybe.
And at, like, really random times? I think she tells him at some point, like, you can call me anytime. And he has some info at, like, 3 in the morning or something. So she FaceTimes him at, like, 3 in the morning. I'm like, really? Would you? And also, just, is that appropriate for the detective to be FaceTiming from their home to the distraught parent?
I can see where that's where this whole method of only doing the specific types of footage, you know, from a certain point of view would make it more complicated, because then you would have to be FaceTiming, otherwise you can't really.
Likewise, when he starts interviewing all the other kids at his school to try and find out what happened to his daughter, I'm just like, would all these kids be FaceTiming random adult they don't know from like their room? Like, there's one time where he's talking to a girl and she's in her room and she's got, I want to say it's her friends, but maybe it's her parents, just in the background lying on her bed, like reading a magazine. And I'm like, you feel perfectly fine just all of you FaceTiming this person you've possibly never met before?
Right. An adult male. Right? Has nobody talked to you about internet safety?
Yeah. And there are a couple of times where it does feel, again, like we hacked into his video feed, because he's not specifically trying to FaceTime anyone, but we can see him.
Mm-hmm.
We see him through the computer's camera, but he's not himself trying to video chat with anyone. So it's like, this has been hacked.
Right.
Someone has hacked this and we're just watching him, but we never get, like, there's an actual hacker character. That doesn't happen. It's just, we need a way for you to see him while he's on the phone with someone.
Right.
Because that's not visual. We can't just have the audio there. So we're going to see it because we can see him from the web camera. We're just going to see him from the web camera.
There's a couple of those clips in the trailer. And yeah, it's a little, I see where you're coming from.
It's just like, who's watching you right now? And that was sort of like, I don't think that was the intention of the film at all. But I did have that sort of like undercurrent running the whole time of, so there's always watching. Someone is always watching.
Put tape watching over your web camera, people.
Oh, I do. I actually just had this conversation with a coworker where, as part of the like rewards you can get, if you know, you have a movie rewards card,
mm-hmm,
for this, one of them was camera shields.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I didn't actually know was a thing. I just put stickers or tape over mine.
Well, I've seen them. Like, I saw a guy propose it on Shark Tank, and I've seen it other places. And I'm like, but why would I spend $8, $10, whatever it is, when I can just put a post-it note over or whatever?
Although I do kind of want to get one for my phone, because the problem with my phone is because I put it up to my face and all that. That sticker usually rubs out much quicker than like the one over my computer, which I never touch. But I was like, that what are you saying here, reward system, about this is the reward for this movie is a camera shield?
Now, the one in the studio is one of those that sits on top of the monitor. We don't have one in the monitor.
Right.
And so where is it right now? It's always have desk. It just like laying down. So yes. If anybody's trying to peer in, all they can see is the table.
Yes, exactly. I totally do
hackers,
that.
Look at my table.
Although they can probably hack into our microphone. And
I'm
hear us,
sure
so.
They probably could.
Yeah, it's terrifying how much they can hack. But we're not told specifically that anyone is hacking. It just, it makes it a little awkward at times when we have this of, hey, someone's watching you. But then you get to figuring out what happened to the daughter, whose name is Margot. And I felt that, I won't say it was obvious what happened to her. I kind of started figuring it out as the movie went on. Mm-hmm. So when you get to the reveal at the end of what happened to her, I'm like, okay, I didn't have it 100% solved, but I kind of knew, like, you know, the main elements of it. So I'm not surprised. And it wasn't evidently a huge surprise. Nobody in my audience was like, but I do think there were some people who were just like, oh, what? What?
Okay.
And this, I think, film, along with the whole technology and all the things we can do with technology and somebody's always watching you, things that they might be saying, also, I think, is going into parents. Because you do get John Cho becomes increasingly desperate as this goes on. And it's amazing. The whole film, it feels from the amount of like desperateness that he reaches that I thought it must have taken like weeks. But then we later get the mention that it's only been like less than a week. It's only been several days that this whole film takes place over. And I'm just like, what?
He falls apart quickly.
Right? Like, at first, he's...
I mean, it's his kid. I get that, but...
He's worried, but then he's able to convince himself of, oh, I know what it is. It's whatever day. So she's just at whatever and hasn't called me until you get, like, the... And this is in the trailer, you know, she canceled her piano lesson 6 months ago. So, wait, what? She's not where I think she is, and...
Right.
I'm trying to reach her, and everyone who says, oh, she must be whatever, and then she's not there, and suddenly it's like... Nope, my daughter is not anywhere I can possibly imagine. Let's call the cops, and we have to go with that. And as more and more he can't find her, and he starts getting, you know, different people start saying, oh, maybe she ran away. Oh, maybe something happened to her. He more and more sort of falls apart with it to the point where there is the thing on video, cell phone video, where he confronts someone physically about it. And that person, it's not even clear that they had anything to do with it, but he's so upset that it's just like snap.
Yeah, that's why he is there's like scrapes and stuff on his face in a couple of parts of the trailer.
Okay. Exactly. So it's, I like it. I definitely like it. It's interesting the different ways they chose to be like, okay, how do we film this? Because he can't be in front of his laptop the whole time.
Right.
So you get the cell phone video. You get at one point he actually buys like secret hidden Wi-Fi cameras or something and installs them. And so you see it from that perspective to the point that you actually see each of them as they come on. So, you know, you can kind of understand, ah, this camera's here, this camera's here, this camera's here as he's setting them up. You get cell phones, you get text messages even at one point. And then there's, and again, I'm like, I use technology pretty well, but I'm not to the like, oh, my phone is my everything. It's my third hand or whatever. So there's some things that threw me off, including there is a live streaming funeral service offer in this film. And I'm just like, you would live stream. I get we're in the, you know, generation of let's put everything on the internet. And that's part of what comes up with this story is that Margot had a video streaming account or whatever, and we think something might have happened to her because of someone from that account. But it's just like, would you really stream a funeral? Just what?
Yeah, it happens.
I mean, really? Does it?
It does.
I thought it was just something they made up for the film. I was like, because we're to that level.
I would
comment.
It doesn't happen on every funeral, but if it's a funeral of a person who
like
extended family who can't make it you know, those types of things. Yeah,
I was thinking like if it's a funeral that's like, you know, you probably could have streamed Aretha Franklin's funeral.
Right.
Because that was just televised. So,
right.
But I didn't think
something like that. Yeah, that's a no. But like, if there's family that is, that can't make it, you know, and still wants to feel like they were able to participate, or not participate, but be at the service, then I've heard of weddings and funerals being live streamed for that.
I had never heard of that, although in my defense, I haven't really gone to any just in my lifetime. I've only been to, I think, 2 funerals and never an actual wedding.
Hmm.
Though I know people have been married, but I wasn't able to go to their weddings. I'm sorry. So, yeah, wow. I just... Huh. This kind of now blows my mind. I just did not know that was a real thing.
I'm trying to count up the number of funerals and weddings I've been to, and it's probably in the 20s and 30s for both of those.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're at very opposing ends then. But yeah, so I liked it. It does stretch a little, not even with the technology aspect, but especially with the Deborah Messing's character with the detective. And again, part of that might be the whole, like, do detectives really FaceTime the parents of missing children sort of thing. It's like, is nobody else in the department involved here? Because he talks with her the whole time. She's the detective on his case. And I'm like, you only assign one detective for a case? Because they're in, I think, San Jose or somewhere.
Okay.
So it doesn't seem they're in a super small area where it's like we've only got 3 missing children's detectives or something. It seems like they have an actual department. I'm like, you don't talk to... And I get why we wouldn't for a film, because then you have way too many characters to keep track of in this sort of detached way of telling a story. But right. It's just like, the relationship between John Cho and Deborah Messing just kind of throws me off in a number of ways. I'm just like, why are you talking so much? Do you not talk to anybody else? Is there nobody else involved in this case? You just... I text my detective and she texts me back. And also, can you tell the parent before, like, it's officially... Okay. But yeah, I liked it. I kind of saw the ending coming to an extent, but it's not meant to be like a mystery per se, you know. It's not Murder on the Orient Express where we're really trying to figure out who done it, because we don't even know who done what. we're not even
first
sure what
we have
happened
to figure out what
ago.
The what is.
Exactly. So I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. I'm not sure that I need to see any other film done in this manner. I'm not sure how many more you can do without, like, stretching it to just, this is just bad. You're putting on this for a gimmick, and it's not helping the story at all.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought this was really good and a good one to watch.
Cool.
Yes. So, we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Our second film today on the everyone's always watching something theme we've got going today, the creepy theme, yes, is Moon. This is from, I think, about 9 years ago or so. And this is set on a moon where Sam Rockwell plays a person on a 3-year contract at a lunar mining base, whatever, who is only... companion and contact is the AI robot Gertie. And that's about all I can say without actually giving away spoilers. So if you are one of those people who doesn't like spoilers at all, thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast. And we'll see you next time. For those still with us, I assume you're totally okay with having this spoiled or you've already seen it.
Yep.
So this very quickly becomes, this is about clones. This person's actually cloned. Like, pretty quickly, I think in like the first 20 or so minutes, which is why I couldn't say it without spoilers, because I was like, there's no way for me to talk about like 80-something% of this movie without mentioning clones. And that's a spoiler if you didn't know, because going into this, all I knew was that there's something not quite right going on and there's essentially a HAL version of an AI around. And clearly the filmmakers have seen 2001. Because the voice of Gertie is played by Kevin Spacey in a very HAL-like manner.
Hmm.
Although it's very interesting considering, you know, that Gertie turns out not to be actually evil, that they went that. I was like, I get you're trying to make me feel unsettled, but why? Since Gertie, what? But so, yeah, Sam Rockwell plays Sam Bell, who's on a 3-year contract. He goes out to, there are these like just randomly roving harvesters out on the moon. They're harvesting some sort of energy thing. It's like kind of given to us at the beginning, but I don't really understand what it is they're harvesting, and it's not that important, I don't think.
Okay.
He goes out, but he gets distracted by seeing something. He thinks he sees something out there, and so he actually crashes his vehicle into the harvester and is stuck. And then we open next with Sam on the infirmary bed, and Gertie saying, hey, you had an accident. Do you remember anything? Are you okay? Well, that Sam gets up and starts going about his day and finds out that one of the harvesters is stalled, and he can't quite figure out why, but he's not allowed to go out there. So he plays a trick, essentially, to convince Gertie to allow him off the base because he's kind of on lockdown, and he goes out to the harvester and discovers the other Sam who's still stuck in that vehicle and brings him back and is like, who the heck is that? And Gertie's like, Sam Bell. And both Sams are very calm about meeting their clones.
So Sam crashed and they just left him there, even though he's not dead. And
well,
and
he's on the moon by himself.
Activated the new Sam.
Yep.
I don't know who they are, but whatever. Gertie, I guess.
Did, yes.
Okay.
So both Sams are amazingly calm at meeting a person who looks exactly like you, who goes by your same name that you didn't know existed until just a moment ago.
Right.
Like, they get very...
It has all your memories.
When it first started and we get the first two, the first clones meeting each other, I was like, this is what would happen like with Hermione the Time Turner and she met herself. I don't know that I'd be that calm meeting myself.
Yeah, I don't think I would existed. Either.
Like,
but this is actually a common theme in sci-fi. Maybe not clones, but like a doppelganger or, you know, some other, maybe from a different dimension or, you know,
yeah,
something
kind of.
So they're you up until X point in time when then you start having separate memories and lives. And yeah, this happened on Star Trek. It's happened. I don't think I would be that calm.
Well, and as it was going on, I at times kept thinking of the movie The Island with Ewan McGregor, which also has clones.
Mm-hmm.
And there the guy is still pretty calm when he sees it. And I'm like, nope. Yeah. And in that one, at least the guy knows he has a clone. And this one, they didn't know they were clones. I was like, in either case, seeing the person who looks exactly like me, I'd be a little freaked out, but you get over it in about like 2 minutes. What the heck?
So is there a quote-unquote real original Sam somewhere? Or
there is, and it's not quite clear how long this has been going on, because each clone essentially has a 3-year contract, and that's how Gertie refers to it, as we can't wake up the next clone until the 3-year contract is up. And then it seems when the 3-year contract finishes, they go lie in a box and are killed. There's a couple of things I'm still a little confused of, even at the end. Like, they lie in a box and there's a flash, but then are they killed? And what happens to that body? Because there's nobody else on the space. We have to send people from Earth, and it sounds like that's anywhere from a 18-hour to 3-day trip, depending on how you're traveling. And then we later find out there's dozens, if not hundreds, of clones on this base, and we get to see the original, well, not the original Sam's memories, we get to see the different like clones memories because they keep a video log. So we get to go into the past logs and see it, and it seems like this has been going on for about 20 something years. Although given what we're told about Sam and his family, and we later see his daughter and she tells us she's 15, it doesn't seem like it could have been more than 15. So I think I maybe read the years wrong, but they were just sort of flashing by as now this log.
Right.
Just to give us the sense that, oh, wow, this has been happening for a while. There have been numerous Sams. It's not just the two of you.
Huh.
But then it's also kind of hinted that the company is specifically killing these clones, because all of the Sams end up ill at the end of their 3-year contract. And it seems, we're never told explicitly, but it seems it's hinted at this is from their food.
Oh.
And what's in their food, that the food essentially
couldn't they fix
slowly
that?
Kills them. I think they're doing it on purpose.
Oh, okay. But that seems inefficient.
Well, because the first thing, and Gertie does this a number of times with both Sams, is almost essentially it's, oh, you seem tired. Can I fix you something to eat?
Yeah, that's and why they're trying to make Gertie seem evil.
And then we get certain shots on the food they're eating or on them preparing the food for them to eat. And we see the different Sam clones climbing into the box and dying all near at the end, including our original Sam who crashed the Harvester and who in my head I had to start referring to as Old Sam and New Sam.
Right.
Because otherwise I'm like, which, but you can really, you can tell visually because Old Sam, as the film goes on, looks more and more like a zombie.
Oh, dear.
Like, he's clearly not well. There's a couple of scenes of him vomiting blood. So if that makes you queasy, yeah, just it's not super long, but it's like, okay, ill.
Hey, I can tell you what they're harvesting.
What is it?
Helium-3.
Yeah,
the current clean and abundant fuel used on Earth.
Is it really? In real life?
No.
Oh, in the story.
In the story.
Okay. I was like, they mention helium-3, but I'm not sure what it is. And we get a couple of times with like sunlight flares over machines. So it kind of seems like they were, and the way the like video for the company is shot, it makes it seem like they're harvesting the sunlight that's reflected off the moon. Because the what they're harvesting doesn't quite matter. It's just the whole, this company is clearly kind of evil. They've led the Sams to believe that they can't get, that all the messages have to be, like, sent. You can't, like, chat over video chat live.
Right.
Because something happened with the satellite. But it turns out, no, there were actual, like, jammer antennas on the moon.
Well, yeah, because if you, I'm reading the synopsis, and he left when his daughter was an infant.
Right.
And so if you think your daughter's an infant and then you're video chatting with the 15-year-old, that would kind of ruin things.
But it's also, like, I'm left at the end. I'm still left with a few questions because it's like, we're led to believe, we don't see it, but we kind of hear it. It sounds like the original Sam is back on Earth with his family. Did he or did he not know that he was cloned? Is he in on this, or was it just right. The company decided to do it on their own?
And did he have an actual 3-year stint on the moon, or did he ever go to the moon, or does he know that? I mean, there's
either way, because the clones all get to see videos from his wife. And so those videos change as time goes on. So when we get with the original Sam, it's the wife is holding the 3-year-old and is very happy and can't wait for Sam to come home. But then when we start with the videos with the new Sam, the wife looks like she's upset. She's not sure if she wants to continue this marriage. She almost looks like she's about to pull off her wedding ring. So we're clearly watching the recorded videos or something.
Right. So it seems like
maybe they're set to play at certain times.
Right. Maybe there was an original Sam who was there for 3 years and there were actual videos that they then just replay for the cloned Sams.
But it's not clear if that Sam knows about it or not.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's Sam Rockwell does a great performance in this as both Sams, particularly because they're at different points in their lives. So they're different.
Right.
The new Sam is a bit more aggressive and violent. And we hear later from the old Sam that that's how he used to be and that his wife actually left him for a period of about 6 months because they were having issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly as the 3 years went on, he sort of, you know, learned and mellowed out and whatever. But it's so very interesting to see him, you know, have to then play both Sams.
Right.
And I'd love to, like, watch the behind the scenes or, like, see the shooting schedule for this of, like, did you go back and forth? Did you go all the way through playing one and then the other?
Yeah.
How did you do this? A la Parent Trap, like, with when you're interacting with yourself. Because there is a scene at one point where the old Sam and the new Sam together play ping pong. And the old Sam is good at it and the new Sam's not, and the new Sam like knocks the table and so he has to come over to the old Sam's side, and clearly that was choreographed because they both move at just the right times.
Right.
And technology wise you know, we've gotten to a point where if I didn't know that those were both Sam Rockwell, I would think you just actually did get twins or something, because it's really well done. But he does so great as playing both of these, you know, same person but in different stages of their lives characters. Kevin Spacey also as the voice of Gertie. I didn't remember, like, any of the casting. I didn't even remember that Sam Rockwell was in this. Mm-hmm. I just had heard of this film. And I was like, okay, I want to see that. I can see why you would do Kevin Spacey as the voice of Gertie. Because, again, he does it in a very, like, Hal manner. In that sort of, you know, sophisticated computer that's trying to be friendly but is still somewhat detached. It's kind of amazing how almost low-tech he seems at times.
Uh-huh.
Because at least with Hal was just the computer system, and so he was in all the video feeds. Gertie actually seems to be this one computer that's on, like, these robotic arms, but he only seems to be able to move throughout certain parts of the base. So when you're not yet sure if Gertie's a good robot or a bad robot, and the two Sams are running around trying to figure out what's going on, they're able to do this because Gertie can't get to them right away and can't see what they're doing the whole time. And I'm just like, really?
Oh.
Evil, you know, corporation, you would leave your clones with not a completely I can see everything you're doing system to where they could hide anything from him?
Right.
That sounds like not the best plan. And it's actually interesting because Gertie says several times, you know, oh, I'm here to help you. That's what I'm programmed for. And I'm like, this is like the reverse of all the robots are going to kill us programming problems that I have. Like, where in those, I'm like, why is the first rule not don't harm humans? With this, since it's clearly run by a corporation that's clearly got, you know, ulterior motives, it's like, why is the first rule not, like, protect the company's best interest? Why is the first rule help Sam no matter what Sam wants? I'm like, really? Because he actually does at one point, he wakes up a third clone because they need that third clone for their plan so they won't be killed by the people coming up in the 18-hour ship. And I'm just like, your programming for that robot should have kept it from doing that. Like, that robot doesn't even care about your... What?
I'm so confused.
Corporation, you messed up here and it's all your own fault. But yeah, it was very interesting. I'm sure it's saying, you know, a lot metaphorically, but I was really just stuck watching Sam Rockwell and going, wow, you're really good at this. And I find Sam Rockwell an interesting actor.
Mm-hmm.
I like him in some things, and other things I'm just like, I don't know what's going on here. This was a really good film. Really well done, even if at the end I still have just a few questions, but not enough to detract from my liking the film.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, good to know. So, I am intrigued and also confused.
Yep. I mean, clones and not evil robot, that seems kind of evil. Is that helpful or not?
No, yeah. No, totally crystal clear now, yeah.
I'm sure your clone would understand.
Probably. I haven't met my clone yet, though, so that's why my head hasn't exploded.
I'm keeping her secret from you.
You're so mean.
Yes. Well, on that note, we're going to end for today. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.